Thank you, David. I'm going to try to use this mic here. I think it sounds like it's working. You guys hear me all right in the back? Okay. It's so good to be with you, and I really appreciate the songs we just got to sing. I love this time of year when there's so many reminders to focus on all the reasons we have to be thankful, and I count you guys among those that we get to be in a congregation together, and I get to know you. And you guys have changed my life for the better, and I'm thankful for you. And I hope today there'll be something of value from God for you. I know a lot of it's kind of addressed at me, so if you get to listen in and hear something that challenges you or course corrects you or just make you think, I hope that God will have that for you. I was telling Aubrey, some of you are probably familiar with the idea of sermonettes. This happens sometimes at reunions where there'll be an hour of time and they'll split it up between two or three different speakers to share short sermons. And I told her, I kind of feel like I have sermonettes today, but it's all from the same speaker. So I'm hoping that God will kind of connect these thoughts in a way that makes sense. There will be a message that'll benefit you. All right, so I've got kind of three titles up here for our brother Dan in the back. Sorry, he's going to have to write a lot. Or shorten it, and people will be surprised when they get into the content. Am I breakable? Am I warm-hearted? And am I moldable? So I'm going to talk about those three things. And I put this in the first person because I recognize that I have things that I need to address based on these questions. So that first one may sound a little bit weird, and you may have one reaction or another reaction to it. But let's hop into this self-evaluation. And I want to start with Matthew 21. And so when you're setting the scene for this Matthew 21, you see Jesus and the Pharisees and the teachers, and they're gathered together, and they are talking, and they're asking Jesus questions. Some of them seem not necessarily well-intentioned, trying to catch him, catch him saying something wrong. But as you go through the Gospels, you'll see Jesus as he addresses the scribes, the Pharisees, the religious leaders among the Jews, he starts addressing them more and more aggressively. And sometimes you hear it and you're like, wow, that doesn't really sound like Jesus here, but he's being very direct. And I think in part it is out of his love for them. He truly wanted them to change, and he saw that they had hard hearts, and he wanted them to be broken, and those hard hearts to be broken, and for them to come to him and recognize and be part of his gospel and part of the plan of salvation. So he's using hard words because he knows they have hard hearts. And so when we get into this verse I'm going to pull up next, put yourself in the place of one of these scribes, one of these Pharisees, one of the teachers who had been steeped in the Old Testament, the law, and they're confronted with someone who's saying that law is fulfilled. Think about if they were to adopt this, if they were to change and proclaim Jesus the Messiah, what would they be giving up? They'd give up power and authority. They would give up respect that they had in their society, their position potentially. They'd give up their way of life that they'd been used to, that they had valued, that they had felt right in. They'd give up traditions potentially that they had devoted their entire lives to. And they would have to admit in front of their peers that they had been wrong. There's a lot weighing on them that is keeping them in a place of immobility, where they're unable to be moved by the message of Jesus. So when we get into Matthew 21, 42 through 44, and I've pulled this up on the screen and I'll read it. And Jesus saith unto them, did ye never read in the scriptures, the stone which the builders rejected, the same is become the head of the corner? This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore say I unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you, and given to a nation bringing forth fruits thereof. And whosoever shall fall on this stone shall be broken, but on whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. This is a hard saying that he's confronting them with. He's telling them they have missed the point, and they have missed the Messiah, this chief cornerstone. And talks about himself as this fulfillment, and that their power, their authority, it's going to be taken from them. But he tells them a reality. Here's what can happen from here. Whoever will fall on this stone will be broken. But if that stone falls on them, they're going to be crushed. And so there's this option in this reality in front of them, and it's in front of everybody. Everybody has to deal with this reality of Jesus and this decision of what will I do with this truth. It is an immutable truth. It doesn't matter whether you believe it or don't believe it, it is true. And everyone is confronted with that decision. And we have that option. We can fall on that stone and we can let it break us and we can let it shape us and change us. Or we can walk past it and it will fall on us and we're gonna go to oblivion. The reality is there. It's not dependent whether we believe it. So the question then is gonna be for each one of us, like it was to them, am I willing to let go of my self-perceptions, my self-image, my reality, the things I value above the things of God? And will I allow myself to be broken by those things? Am I willing to have my will shaped to God's will? Am I willing to be obedient? And there's a cost of discipleship. There was for them, there is for us. Let's look at this in Psalms 51, 14 through 17. And it talks about, and it's also in 3 Nephi 4, 49, this very similar language. This willingness for us to break our will, to break ourselves of everything that opposes God, it's what he's asking from us. So Psalms 51, 14 through 17. Deliver me from blood guiltiness, O God, thou God of my salvation. And my tongue shall sing aloud of thy righteousness, O Lord. Open thou my lips, and my mouth shall shew forth thy praise. For thou desirest not sacrifice, else I would give it. Thou delightest not in burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken, a contrite heart. O God, thou wilt not despise. That's what is required of us, that we would open ourselves up to be remade by God, that the things that we cling on to, that we would evaluate them and say, is this what God wants for me? And if not, I need to get rid of it. I need to change. It's that willingness to be broken. All right, so a second question. Am I warm-hearted? So in Matthew 24, verse 12, we see Jesus' followers, they're asking him about the last days, what it'll be like. They had this question a lot. And he gives them a lot of different descriptions of what it's going to look like or things that'll happen. But he gives them this description in 12 that's always stuck with me. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. So that's what it's going to look like. There's going to be iniquity. There's going to be gross sin against God. And a lot of people are going to get cold, have cold hearts because of that. Just a second. So I don't bring this up to make any prediction on where we are in God's timeline, but when I hear it, it makes me think about what I see around me sometimes, what I see in myself. And I don't know, I would love to know the full meaning of this, maybe it will someday. Is this love that is waxing cold, is that because people are being iniquitous? Or is it in part because they're reacting to the iniquity around them and it's hardening them? Maybe it's both. So for many people though, I see in myself the tendency or the temptation, and in others, to get cold to the people around me, to kind of button myself up and go into protection mode instead of staying open and staying warm and being open to them. And we see just rhetoric in our society ratcheting up every day. So I want to tell you just a little bit of background, something I've seen real practical in our society, and just something I've seen kind of in my own line of work that maybe has influenced that. So for those of you who don't know, I'm in marketing, that's my profession, and my main thing is helping companies sell products to other companies. And early in my career, like so the early 2000s, 2010, there was just a change that happened and mostly brought on by the internet. And there was this surge in people trying to sell things online or make money online. And companies were, individuals were doing everything they could think of to try to figure out how do I make money with this internet. And at the same time, there was a big disruption in traditional media. And I'll get to the point of this in a minute. So there were a lot of additional media sources, blogs, news sites that weren't traditional, and they all were trying to figure out the same thing. How do I make money with the internet, with people being on the internet? And so there was this real obsession with how do I get clicks to my website so that I can monetize it and make money? How do I get people to share it on social media? And there was a science developed about how to try to influence people to do specific behaviors that would make them money. And I was at a conference early, it would have been around 2010, where there were people who were speaking about, hey, we've done research, we now know, how can we get more people to visit our website? How can we get them to share our content so you can make more money? And I'll give you just a few clips from that. They were really focused on different emotions that you should elicit to be able to get your message shared and get money coming in from that message. I'll let you guys think about what emotions might be most effective in getting people to share. All right, I'll share the first one. Okay, so I've got a couple quotes here. I'm gonna try to read them from my side. So this is an article from 2013. Most influential motions on social networks revealed. Here's a little quote from the article based on the research. And this was based specifically in China. The moral of the story is that when it comes to the spread of information, anger is more powerful than other emotions. So if you want to spread your message, let that inner rage out. That's what MIT is recognizing. Here's another one. This one was based on research in the US. And the quote's from Smithsonian Magazine, and the title is, What Emotion Goes Viral the Fastest? This is Jonah Berger, a professor of marketing at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, reached a similar conclusion, talking about the research I just showed you, after conducting a study in the United States. Anger is a high arousal emotion which drives people to take action, he says. It makes you feel fired up, which makes you more likely to pass things on. So this was a thing that people were noticing for the early 2010s, and they started to monetize rage and anger. It's not a new thing, but it just got measurable once it moved to the internet. Here's another one. This one's a little bit more recent, and this is talking specifically about kind of the rise of false news. And it says, research by Vose et al. Indicates that emotions significantly influence the pattern and scope of information communication. Their study found that emotional content spreads faster and further than neutral information. In particular, false news spreads significantly more than true news because it evokes strong emotions such as fear, surprise, and disgust, while true news tends to elicit emotions like trust, joy, and sadness. So those are emotions that are less likely for people to share, those other types of emotions. How does this relate to us? What's the remedy for this? How can we counteract this escalation? So Philippians 4:4-9 has some guidance. And as we read this, I'm not saying there are not real things in our society that are wrong and need to be remedied. There obviously are. There are obviously problems that people should be discussing. But what I'm saying, though, is that the internet is an endless, bottomless source of this information that would try to get you to be angry. It's what it's tuned for, because people have found they can make money on it. And so we have to be aware of this and not let ourselves be sucked into this bottomless pit of anger. Because what does it do? It gives us reason to demonize others, endless supply of it. So Philippians 4:4-9 says on the other side, here's some things we should be focused on. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. Those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you. So we really have two options, and what we put in is what's going to come out of us. There's a couple verses in 1 Peter 3, 8 through 9, and Philippians 4, 4 through 9, that really, to me, told the same story from a couple of the early church fathers. From 1 Peter 3, 8 through 9. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil, nor railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. And I think one of the reasons these verses came to mind is I saw a quote recently from somebody out in the public sphere, and their comment was, hey, we've tried turning the other cheek, and that doesn't work. We can't keep going down that route. It just doesn't work. They were choosing in that moment to proclaim that, hey, the teachings of Christ are just not relevant anymore. Everything has changed, and we need to do other things instead. And this is really the way that we have. This is what has been put before us about how we change things around us and the life that we should live. It's through this type of mindset instead of that. I had a moment with, you guys probably know, at least some of you, our brother Albert Layton Floyd. And he's been someone, I don't see him, I see him maybe once a year, but every time I see him, I'm thankful for it, and he's a blessing to me. And he's someone, I talked to him, and I had just a 5-minute interaction with him, but I said something about just lamenting that anytime I run into a problem, or anytime I run into an interaction, I seem to always react the wrong way first. And why is that? How can I fix that? How can I have the most natural thing be a reaction that is good and is holy and pure when I'm coming into contact with someone, instead of having to think about it later that night? What would have been the right thing to do in that moment? And he has a real kind and loving way, but he corrected me. And he said, it has to be in you. That's where it has to come from. That love for others has to be core to you for your reaction to be out of love. And it was it's kind of a hard thing to tell someone they don't have love in their heart, but the way he said it and the truth of it, I took it and I understood, you know, that is really right. That is how this whole equation works, and that's what I need in my life. It needs to start within me. I need to have a warm heart to my fellow man. Otherwise, my actions, my words are gonna come out the opposite. So what are the stories I'm telling myself about the people around me? What do I, when I see their actions, and am I considering it, well, this is because they're wrong and they think wrong and they just are wrong? Or is it out of a consideration for the struggles they're having or their place in life or just the brokenness of all of us? How am I letting fear and anger boil in me and pour over? Or am I cultivating love for the people around me? Question. All right, so the third question. Am I moldable? I'm going to read from Jeremiah 18, 1 through 6. And you get a visual picture here of a moment. God does a lot visually for us, it seems like. And he did it here for Jeremiah. The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause thee to hear my words. And then I went down to the potter's house, and behold, he wrought a work on the wheels. And the vessel that he made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter. So he made it again another vessel, as seemed good to the potter to make. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter? Saith the Lord, behold, as the clay is in the potter's hand, so are ye in mine, O house of Israel. So Jeremiah gets taken to the scene, and he sees a potter working with a pot that is just broken, and it's wrong, and nothing, it's not going to be of any value. And he sees this person running this wheel, remake it into something that's of value. But it had to be softened and it had to be molded. It had to yield itself to the maker to be able to be made into something that would be a blessing to the people around it. How does that happen? There's a verse from James 1, 2 through 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. So some notes out of here. This may take a while. You've probably noticed it's taking a while for me to get where I need to be. Maybe you've seen that in your own life. But we have a God who's faithful, who's going to keep working on us if we'll yield to him to make us into something that he recognizes himself in, something that is useful and something that's a blessing. But it may take some time. It may take some work. And that work may not always be fun. It looks like falling into temptations, struggles. It looks like trials of faith, and it takes patience. It's going to take some time. I'm going to read from Ezekiel, and then I want to just reflect a little bit. Ezekiel 36, 24 through 28, and this is talking about that ability of God to shape us and make us fleshy and warm and moldable. Ezekiel 36, 24 through 28. For I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all countries and will bring you into your own land. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness and from all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. And I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. And you shall be in the land that I gave to your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your God. So we see that example of God willing to take on that work and to help us, to mold us, to sprinkle us with clean water, to make us clean, to break out this hard heart and put in a warm heart. But like we looked at before, sometimes that takes some time. I was thinking a lot of you were probably thinking about our brother Dan these last month and last few weeks. And think a little about all the positive memories. He was just a pillar of our community, a pillar of our church. And I can think back on so many positive times where I was shaped by things he'd say to me or things I saw him do, his example. And I was thinking back about his life. And so I've probably known Dan since I was 10, so about 30, 34 years. And even just in that time, I know some of you knew him way longer than that. In that time, I saw him change. I saw him, God continued to mold him. And I don't want to make that sound like he was in a bad spot when I first met him. It wasn't like that. But I know he talked about what he had come out of and the choices that God had opened up to him and how he changed his life. But it didn't stop at that conversion. It kept working. God kept working on him and shaping him. And I think that's one of the blessings of being in a body of believers, that we get to see God work on people and change their lives, and we get to have that witness, that continuity across the years of seeing how God's shaping them. So Dan was a really gifted person. If you knew him, he was good at a lot of things, and he really used those as service opportunities. And there were so many different things I saw him do for me or for others that were based on a gift that God had given him that he had maximized for the use of others. A lot of examples. I know there were specific things he did for me that shaped and changed my life in really positive ways. But one of the things that really became more and more clear to me over the last several years of experiencing him is that service was more and more not out of obligation or knowing that it was right, but it was flowing out of a, really a pure love for people. Pure love for God that was guiding and energizing all that activity. Instead of hardening over the years, he got softer. Something that stood out to me in a memory. I was trying to go back and find it, but I think it was in probably a sacrament service and a testimony service. And he was telling about an interaction he had had with a client. And he got to interact with people all day long in his job, but he had an opportunity just in the last couple years where someone came to him, and someone I think he had known for quite a while, and said, I want to know about God. I don't know anything about God. And he had felt the impression that he needed to understand and know God. And so Dan got the opportunity from a greenfield view, nothing there, to try to describe God. And what I remember him, you know, put yourself in that place where you're confronted with a question and you just don't know where to start because there's so much information. What do you say first? What's going to connect with the person? And what encapsulates is the best? Really hard task, unaided by the Holy Spirit, impossible. But Dan, what I remember him starting out with in his discussion of who God was and what it was all about was, what I remember him saying is, it's all about love. And what a way to start, for that to be your first reaction to someone asking about the story, the good news of the gospel, to recognize that at the core of all of this is a love for God and a love for man. And that really, that touched me and helped me see where our brother Dan was. And I just want to read, I'd kind of gone back, and if you haven't, this week is perfect time to listen to it. The last sermon that I found recorded from our brother Dan was in August, and he took on the topic of thanksgiving and gratefulness. And it's a really good thing to go back and listen to, especially this week, as we remember all the reasons we have to be grateful. And I just want to share a couple things he said towards the end of that sermon, because I thought they summarized a lot of important things, and important things for us to think about and to shape our lives. And he said, I have a greater appreciation for time. He was reflecting back on his last several years and his mortality and recognizing it and the extension of his life and what would he do with that time. And he recognizes in this sermon that service is an act of gratitude towards God. And he says, so I have a greater appreciation for time. I have a greater gratitude for every day that the Lord gives me. And then addressing us. And this is the challenge I would like to offer you as a call to action. Serve the Lord with gladness. Find things that you can do to serve him, to further the gospel of Christ. And it's going to be different for everybody, but anything is better than staring at the computer or your phone or the television. There's always time. That's not the problem. It's the direction and the drive and the encouragement to do it. And again, I want to say I'm thankful. How thankful I am for all your prayers and concerns for us. It shows me what it is like to be part of a family that loves me, a family that I love. And he closed with, serve the Lord with gladness. Find something you can do and do it with gusto and joy and thanksgiving to the Lord. So I'll close with this again. Am I breakable? We're each confronted with this truth of the gospel, the truth of Jesus. We're forced to make a decision about it. Not making a decision is making a decision. When I'm confronted with this in my daily life, who I'll be loyal to? Am I breaking my will to the will of God? Am I falling on that? Or am I going to be in a place where I'm going to be crushed? Am I warm-hearted? Have I filled myself up with things that encourage me to rage against others, or to things that would encourage me to love others and be a blessing to them? I'm faced with that choice every day. You all are faced with it every time we open up our phones. Am I moldable? Or am I letting God's grace, this influence of his spirit on my life, am I letting that work to make myself who he wants me to be? Or am I pushing back against it? And am I rigid? So I'll leave you with those thoughts and that challenge to look at yourself and see how are these things working in your own life. Thank you.